Oh, what's that? Turn the fucking thing off. Cool. Yeah, fucking metronome. Hello. Welcome to the episode 7 of the Low Fidelity Podcast. This week is a real, a real good episode. We have, I'm going to read the pronunciation right, because I do not want to butcher his name, who we have on today. We have Matej Skutnik. He is a video game developer, comic book, artist. He also makes paintings, original artwork, all sorts of stuff. The Flash games he makes, some of the sort of notable ones you might be familiar with are The Submachine, Daymare Town, and then what else has he done? He's also studied architecture. So there's a lot of his artwork seems quite informed by some of his architecture. Really interesting artist in general, and also a great insight into sort of the sort of culture in Poland around art and gaming and comic books and stuff like that. It's very, very interesting. I mean, I'm not going to go into too much. I'd rather let him speak for himself. But also this week, I did want to say before we get started that fucking sucks that David Bowie died this week. Man, I mean, I recorded a sort of part for him on the podcast on the day it happened, but I don't think I can use it. I couldn't keep myself together, to be honest, man. I think this is seems like quite a lot in England and across the world. It's one of the few, for me, and probably the only celebrity, fucking, he was more than that, he was an artist, but famous person, I don't know, personally, who died that I can't seem to get over it, really. 4 days, 5 days later, it's just amazing what a profound effect he has on a lot of people, and it's just, but beyond that, I mean, I'm just also in, I mean, I'm very, very sad, and I've shed quite a few, you know, tears over it. But I also think it's amazing that if you see the last album he wrote, the fact he painted his death in the art before he went was amazing, to have such a clarity and focus of thought to almost turn his death into, like, this conceptual art piece. And when I rewatched the Lazarus video, I almost just, you know, that shot at the end where he goes back into the cupboard and disappears, I couldn't help but even sort of smile, you know, through all the sadness I've felt because of it. And I'm sure probably you listening has felt the same as well. If you're, you know, any sort of Bowie fan, you know, and it's hard to not be, you know, to have him affect your life in some small way. Just even the amount of presence his music has in English culture and American culture and European culture and all over the world. And I remember looking back at that video the other day and then just smiling through it after going, fucking, it went out like a boss, man. Like, you know, he went out with not one shred of integrity or coolness gone. You know, he kept his legacy intact. And man, that's impressive. I mean, if that's one thing to take from it, is like all these cryptic sort of hints to it in his lyrics. I mean, weirdly enough, the night he died, the morning before I found out, I was talking to someone about how I thought didn't have long left because the album seemed like a goodbye. But I didn't fucking think, you know, a day later that would happen. I mean, a couple of days after release. It's amazing. It's kind of a testament to how someone can hang on, really. It seemed like he hung on just long enough, you know, to put it out. And then once it was done, he sort of was released. Like the last lyric in the video is, I'm free, ain't that just like me? And yeah, man. I mean, I'm going to try not to dwell on too much now because I'll start getting emotional again, and I find it quite hard to hold it together, to be honest. It's just weird. I almost feel pretentious that I'm getting upset over a person I never met dying, like, to this level, but I do know him, you know. I know his music, I know his art, and he doesn't know me, but I know him like I would know a best friend almost, you know, the way his music spoke to me individually, and a lot of people feel that way. So yeah, the one thing to take from it is, although he passed away a little bit, you know, 69 isn't the best, you know, he could have lived a little longer, but the life he's led, he really ended it on his own terms in an epic way that will, he almost ended his life like a season finale, you know, And wow, you know, what a fucking dude. That's all I can say, man. I mean, there's something coming up that I'm doing to honour him myself, which I won't go too much into this. More details will be on next week, but I am working with a charity, putting out a single, a tribute single to David Bowie that has bits of all his songs and, well, not all of them, because he has thousands of them, but a few of his songs that I really like, and ones I could fit together into one big sort of 4 or 5 minute song. I think it's sounding really good. We're putting that out with the lyrics a bit twisted, also because I'm doing it in the style I would make music, because I feel like if Bowie would cover someone else, he'd do it in his style. So I'm going to try and celebrate him by doing what he does in my style. But the single's going to be out for download. You pay what you want, and all the money will be going to charity. The charity of which will be either, depending on the day it comes out, because we're trying to get it out straight away, while this is still an important issue, you know, it'll either be in the description of the episode, or I'll talk about it fully in next week. That being said, this week's episode is, as I said, a really good talk as per usual. I felt like I had to say something, because, you know, being such a meaningful artist to me, I felt like I needed to talk about it at some point on here. Not that, I don't know, you guys probably don't care, I'm just a fucking dude in my room, and I, but, you know, it meant something to me. But yeah, thank you, you know, and just take some time to thank, I don't know, appreciate artists while they're still around. Now I'm just trying to think about the artists we've still got for another 20-30. I know it sounds selfish because they're personal people outside of that, but I think, you know, the fact we've still got Prince for another 20-30 years, we've still got Nick Cave for a while, we've still got all these great artists, and try and appreciate them while they're in their day, you know. And also, if you're in any form creative, fucking go out and be as fabulous as you would want to be, because that is what Bowie was all about, and that's what you'd be all about, I guess. I don't know what I'm fucking talking about. I'm rambling. Look, I'm gonna get on with the episode. Great episode. I'm actually in my room, and I believe that's my mother has just knocked at the door, because I have her key, so I better go let her in. Goodbye. Like, both of us, me and Jamie, are musicians, and like, yeah, we tend to, more myself than Jamie, I guess, like, I tend to write and play most of the music myself, in my room. I have a studio set up, and same sort of thing. It's something quite, I don't know, addictive about the kind of having that little cave you go to and you make the stuff, you know. Like, I can be and the same sort of routine for me. Yeah, I can be in that, like, room for 4 days in a row, 10 hours a day, and then I might have a week where I'm barely in there at all, you know.
Yeah, there's the productive phase and there's the doing nothing phase for the same amount of time, so.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, man, like, especially just coming out of Christmas.
I really don't want to call this art, but it's kind of, it has the markings of artistry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because how it is done. It's done by one person, and what I do what I want to do in those games, and nobody told me what to do.
Why wouldn't you call it art?
Excuse me?
Why wouldn't you call it art?
That's a deep question, and it goes goes back to my days of being a comic book artist. I never actually considered myself an artist, because for me, art is a work of, you know, something quick, and like we said, when you have that spark, then you create and it's done. Mm-hmm. While when you create comic book, you cannot do that in one sitting, for example, or 1 week, because when you have to draw 46 pages or 60 pages, then it takes, for example, 3 months at least.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So it's not artistic in that way. You have to, you know, put away the thinking of an artist who just, you know, has an idea and bam, and there it is.
So you have to
be a walker. You have to be a proper walker, to sit every day and draw and draw and draw, and then it's done.
Mm. Yeah, that's a hard, because that's something I was saying as well when we were talking about, like, I have the exact same thing with the making music. I have to do a big chunk of the mixing as well, and the arrangement. I have a big to-do list of, you know, sometimes if I've got like 60 tracks of instruments going on, I've got to work out where they're going to sit in a mix, or
Yeah, exactly. I find out that's a bit common for almost all art.
Yeah,
except for the fine arts, when you just go into the studio. For example, when you are a fine artist, then you don't do anything for let's say 3 months. Then you go into a studio and everything is covered in paint, and you have a painting that's done.
Yeah,
and that flame just burns very quickly. While when you're creating comic book, then you have those 60 pages to draw, and they have to look like almost the same.
Yeah, what do you prefer? Do you prefer
on the same
those
level.
Quick moments, or do you prefer those kind of more consistent, drawn out, like say with a comic where you get to spend, you know, a whole body of time?
I know what he's gonna say, the drawn out, obviously, because that's what
he's devoted to. Yeah.
Because it's more, I suppose it's more consistent, isn't it? And you know you can do it every day, whereas those eureka moments only come along.
And coming back, that's why I do not consider myself an artist, because I prefer that steady work for let's say 6 months.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I have to agree with you on that as well. I think I like that kind of getting up and just knowing I've got, you know, 10 things I need to do that day that kind of
in
a creative format.
I'm big on creating lists for me to do first of all you spell out everything you have to do or in one day or maybe in a month, and then you cross them out when you do them. That's so satisfactory.
Yeah, I think that's something that maybe not people in a creative environment sometimes do enough, I think, like, because it keeps your discipline. Like, I know that a couple of years ago I started to keep lists what I do, and it's so rewarding when you tick that thing off.
Exactly. But you know, people always ask me, how come you can create so much in so little time? And this is all comes down to the the discipline. And that helps a lot. Creating lists of things to do is like the half of the success for me.
I imagine, I suppose, like, especially like a video game as big as Submachine, if you were sitting down every day to work on Submachine, that's a big task. But if you were, today I'm just working on this one particular room and I'm drawing it, then you've got kind of a lot smaller of a goal for that day, and it's a lot more achievable and more rewarding, I guess, right?
The Submachine can be, you know, divided into sections of different locations that appear in the game. So I can, for example, say that this today I'm doing one location. It's about 10 or 15 rooms, and I have to draw them all, and that's it. And on the other hand, when I draw comic book, for example, then I say to myself that today I'm drawing just one page, and that's it. And even if I have some more spare time in the evening or something like that, then I don't, you know, go on and do more, because I know that tomorrow I have the same task. So when, for example, you have a 60-page story, then after 60 days you are done. But you have to maintain this regime of drawing one page a day.
And you always meet your own deadlines, do you?
Yeah, I do.
Short a lot.
I love to set them and I love to meet them, but I love those deadlines because I'm the one who's setting those. So,
I know.
That's some kind of a challenge to meet those deadlines.
And you take that on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair play, man. Yeah, because I definitely I struggle quite hard with my deadlines. I think I set mine too soon. I think I'm sometimes a bit overly optimistic with mine.
Jake's currently sitting in my house, and he's a list maker, and my house is a mess. And he walks in every single time and goes like, you need to clear your life up. I'm like, no.
But then it works for you, doesn't it? Like,
it totally works. That's the kind of like, the other stuff gets organized and everything else around it falls apart.
Well, sure, that's the other side of the coin, actually, for me, because my space when I work is completely messy, and I hate when somebody comes in and tries to, you know, put all the stuff on a proper place. That's
it has to be on the floor. I knew where it was.
Yeah, exactly. I have many things on the floor right now around me, and they just have to be there. They are in arm's reach, and that's a perfect spot for them.
I suppose everyone has even. Like, if something seems messy to someone else, suppose the same with here, like
method to madness.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, you'll know where it all is. So I suppose. Cause
you find your comfort space, and that's it, and then you create.
Yeah, like, well, even my mum's like that. Nesting. My mum's like that, right? My mum's 50, and you'd think she would be organised by now. And then I realise she is, but, like, she'll have paperwork all over the house. And then you kind of go, how does she know where it all is? But then she knows, I suppose, because she has that organised. It's strange. I suppose everyone has their own patterns. Yeah. I suppose the sort of more standard pattern, which maybe what I have, is where I have a drawer for certain things, doesn't necessarily work for everyone, and it doesn't mean it's any better or worse.
Yeah, some people keep things in folders or something like that. Well, I have to see them all the time. So I've got all my paints, and I've got two sets of paints. The ones for the comic books. These are the watercolors and all the brushes and everything. And that's all mixed with the things that I do for video games, which is completely incompatible, mm-hmm. but this all exists in one workspace for me. I always say to myself, when I finish, for example, a comic book, then I'll put away all the paints to the side, and I'll have more space, you know, to be clean and have some space to create games. But that this never works, actually.
Are you a member of Patreon?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, and how do you find that?
Well,
as a format,
I like it a lot, actually. The thing is, when you go to Patreon, you already have you need to have the fan base behind you already. You cannot go there with expecting, you know, to build something. Mm. So it was easy for me because those people were following me for the last 10 years since the first Submachine. They've been all there, and last year I decided finally to go there and try my luck, and it paid off. And that's my only job, actually, right now.
That's great.
Yeah, that's a great position to be in, man. I think your fan base seems really, really supportive.
I think they grew, actually, with my games. So it's really been 10 years. So those people are like 10 years older than when I started playing those games. Yeah, I think my demographic is a bit like me. I'm 40 years old right now. So it's like people in their 30s or 20s or late 20s. So they can afford to pay actually some money for games. Yeah, for the longest time, this wasn't an option actually, and there were different strategic moves for a flash game designer what to do to earn money. Mm. But right now, it's kind of going in the right direction where I have the direct contact with my let's say fans.
Yeah, it seems. The last sort of 5 years of it's things are starting to democratize a bit more, that maybe most artists of sorts, or most game makers, or most creative people, if they have a form of fan base, can have a smaller sustainable fan base as opposed to maybe a large fan base for a couple of years, and then they kind of fall off the radar. And it seems like you can have a more consistent, long lasting fan base. I think it's a lot healthier as well. It's like what you were saying about the kind of consistent work. You know, you'll always have people that will be into what you're doing, so you don't have to have too much pressure of worrying how big or the next thing is going to be, because you've kind of got a consistent.
Yeah, exactly, and not only that, but I was able to remove all the ads from my websites, and I didn't have to rely on, you know, the views, the clicks, or anything like that anymore. I think, in my opinion, that was the biggest advantage of Patreon, where the enormous weight is taken off your shoulders, and you can just do yourself and do your stuff, and that's it, and don't have to worry about the views and the clicks.
That's the dream, isn't it? You know, as a creative, I know you said you didn't want to call it art, but this sort of to make the exact product that you want, that you enjoy to make, and that you think is really great, without feeling like you have to sell or promote.
I don't have to compromise anything, actually, exactly. Right now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not art, but it's kind of parallel, you know, to what a real artist is doing. But it's not quite there. I don't like calling it art. I never have. Because... Mm-hmm. As I said, that was that's taken from my old years of creating comic books, where they never have been considered art. Especially in my country, where the culture of reading comics is non-existent, actually.
Really?
So yeah. We've been, you know, we've been having we were on the wrong side of the wall, right? The Berlin Wall. We were in the communist zone.
Yeah.
And communists consider comic books to be the thing of the West and rotten and so.
Wow, never realized.
So the culture, the people do not know what a good comic book is, actually. They only
continues all the way through to today. Is that something
because
with young people?
Because this entire generation has to die out. You know, the young. And besides, young people are into games and everything else. There's so much input right now and so much content online and everywhere that comic books are just fading away. But that's okay. That's what I love about this, because that lets me create what I want in comic form. Because there are actually no money attached to it. You understand?
Yeah.
So where's your audience based for your, like, you know, collectively, like, where kind of does your audience for your comic books average at? You know, do you get many people reading your comic books in Poland, or do you?
Well, in Poland, right? There are some people reading my comic books, but it's a very small number. It's like a couple thousand people, and that's it. So I will be creating e-books this year for my larger audience in English.
Great.
They will be available in my shop, so we'll see what happens there. But it all comes back to being able to call yourself an artist, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Comic books never were and never will be for me. Well, they are an art form, but I am not an artist. So let's put it like that.
It's strange, isn't it, that the categories that are put on, because we've kind of got a similar thing in the UK, I think, with stand-up comedy. Some people would consider, which I'd consider it art, because you create an hour-long show, and it's been prepared and it has a purpose. But a lot of people consider it just a person kind of, a lot of people, so many people just think it's a person on stage
or
just talking.
People think it was like a bar trick.
Yeah.
Whereas like there's, I don't know about Poland, but in the UK, things like that, people pretend to like it.
Yeah.
People say they like it when they don't actually like. The same with comic books, UFC or or stand up comedy. People pretend they could say they like this stuff. If you start delving into what they like and if they know any of the classics or any of the greats,
sure,
they're just lost instantly.
Yeah,
that's strange, because you have the best stand up in the world, actually.
Oh, yeah, no, we have some fantastic stand-up coming out of this country, but, like, again, it's not...
I really prefer that to the American ones, because the pure honesty of English stand-up is just, you know, that's a killer.
Yeah.
For example, last week I was binge-watching again Stuart Lee.
Yeah,
which is, in my opinion, is just a pure genius.
Yeah,
he's probably my favorite, actually, out of in terms of English comedians. In terms of as well that exact thing of, he's one of those people that if someone doesn't think stand-up comedy is an art form, if you show them Stuart Lee, you can see there's this whole. It's a.
There you have it. That's on our silver platter.
There was that interview you did. Was it on Screwers Pips podcast where he did? He said that I wouldn't ever make a film. Because all the content I could put into a film, I could put into a stand-up show and create that way, and create that imagery and put these stories in people's heads without having to deal with that whole other side of it.
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
I think that's kind of similar with comics, because comics, a certain part of that world is put in the reader's head, because the voices, there ain't no voice actors in comics. You know, the pictures are there, but you still... The little bit in between each window, how they get to the next, window, and how they talk in what you read is still to the interpretation of the reader, which is something that's really liberating.
Yeah.
And sometimes now, like big budget, maybe Marvel films and stuff, there's not much left. Not that it's a bad thing, but not much left to the imagination for.
Well, if you saw like Watchmen, that was, I mean, amazing comic book. When you take it onto screen, it takes on its own character, its own life. Mm. And that's one I think was done very well. But you've lost that, your own sort of impression of what Rorschach's voice might have been like suddenly dissipates into what it into
actually
that
is
interpretation.
In a movie. Yeah.
And it's disappeared. What?
But well, you know, but the problem is with comic books and adaptations is when you have a comic book that really understands the medium, that it's actually not about what's on the picture, but what's as you said, what's between the panels.
Mm.
That's the most important thing, because that's what's happening in your head. And when you have a comic book that understands that and uses it well, then it's kind of, you cannot create a good movie out of it.
Well, Alan Moore,
because you lose everything that's supposed to happen inside in the head of a reader.
Well, Alan Moore believes that that the creative world is a real thing, and that through your imagination, your dreams, it's infringing on our reality.
It kind of is. It's kind of.
That's a scary man. By the way,
he's one of the most.
I'm afraid of him.
Sorry,
I'm afraid of him. Actually, he's a really scary man.
Yeah, he's him and. Have you seen him and?
And a scary intelligent too.
Yeah.
Have you seen him and Stuart Lee? They've done a little sort of 20-minute interview thing together. And Alan Moore's worked on a bunch of Stuart Lee stuff.
I think I might have a few years ago, but I don't remember actually.
Yeah, they're a good meeting of minds.
One thing he said that blew my mind was the fact that he'd been approached by a company to make the drinks that they drink in Watchmen, the fictional soda drinks that they have, to make that into like a real product. And so to like have, which for him, he sort of said that he, you know, obviously he didn't love the sort of consumer idea of it, but the fact that something that came out of nowhere becomes a comic book, and then that becomes part of the real world.
Yeah,
it's that sort
I've
of blending which he loves.
It says importing from the imaginary world.
Importing,
which
yeah.
is like import and export from the imaginary world. That's a really cool idea. Okay. It'd be like the same. Get I mean, because you were selling the gnome character, weren't you making figures of those?
The gnome characters, no.
Did you have a sculpture that you put out? Maybe I'm mistaken.
Well, that's just the first draft of the sculpture, but it's not gnomes. It's a person. It's a character from my comic book, actually.
Oh yeah.
The black one. It's completely a black dude in a black robes and just white face. But yeah, we are planning to finally someday, for example, let's say in May. Maybe in May, put it out and sell it, actually. But that's yes, as you said, something that was just in my head and then drawn, and then it turns into a real object in real life. And people were
exciting, right?
And people were surprisingly, it was very well received. Because as you said, there is something strange when you see something that was just drawn, and you had to, you know, fill all the gaps with your own imagination. Then you see that in a real object that appears next to you, in front of you. That's cool.
I find it fascinating. I mean, to go more deep on that, when you think about it, really, even I was thinking about this a while back, how when you sit in a room, you're sitting in a place that's built on imagination, because an architect designed the room you're sitting in. You know, we're sitting on chairs. Someone designed that chair and made it.
Everything came out of human creation.
Yeah, obviously, everything bar nature. You know, you are living in a world that's marginally kind of.
But then you can jump the gun and say that nature, because nature made us, that nature's responsible for everything.
Yeah,
the natural
bias,
order.
Yeah,
you take it back to physics, you take it back to the Big Bang.
Yeah.
I've been listening to a lot of Lawrence Krauss recently.
Yeah,
so.
We like to get deep sometimes.
Ruin the podcast.
Sure.
But that was something else I was going to talk to you about, was the actual whole culture of do you find yourself, that there's a kind of, I watched a film recently called Indie Game the Movie. I don't know if you've seen that.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it. That was for me, that was Window to Another World. I know what you want to ask me about, but
I was wondering if you're saying it's Window to the other sort of another world, and I guess it's probably going to be a no, but like whether you found there's a kind of community in those kind of independent game developer worlds, you know, like, because it seems like
there probably is. I just don't have any contact actually with the gaming world and the development world.
I would have thought someone would have reached out to you. Has that not happened? Like,
well, you know, I'm actually not a real developer, right? I'm a Flash Games designer, let's say. That's another category, and I don't blame anyone for not reaching to me, because I just create Flash games that are played in the browser.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, kind of self-deprecating, but it's kind of true. So, and I mean, Flash games were always subsets of real games, and they were considered something inferior, actually.
There's something nice about Flash games, though, that the fact that you can just find them online, play them then and there. Because, I mean, that's how I found Submachine. I think it was literally
the beautiful simplicity to the format.
I think I must have found, like, Submachine, and I played a couple of the Daymare Towns, and I might have played something else of yours. I can't think of it. I know I've definitely played I played all the Submachines bar the new one, and I think two of... I don't know how many Daymare Towns are on now, but I think I played one or two of them. I remember, but I found them on a late night binge, just listening to podcasts on the internet, probably about 6 or 7 years ago. And then about 8 or 9 months, I'll kind of I'll Google it and see if a new one's come out. And then when it does, I know that usually I end up staying up till 3 or 4 in the morning trying to finish it. And there's something nice about how easy the access is for someone, you know, like that. I suppose maybe if I had to go to a store, or maybe if I had to go to Steam and download it, I might not have caught me at the right time, you know, because I was just sort of doodling about on the computer at the time. You know, it's interesting because it can reach a real good audience that way.
The internet creates free access to, like, instant access to it.
But what you described is actually the definition of casual game, which is looked upon by the real gaming community. It's looked down by the gaming community. And Flash gaming is actually, in my opinion, it's dead, and it has been for several years right now. Ever since the first iPhone came out and the smartphone market emerged, the Flash has been slowly dying and dying and dying.
What do you think about that? Do you think that's a bad thing?
Well, that's just the evolution. I have to adapt to it, and that's what I want to do this year. Because I was creating Flash games so long until last year, only because of the Submachine, actually. Because I knew in my heart that I can't let people down and switch the platforms before finishing the final one. I couldn't have 10 years of, you know, free Flash web browser games and give them away to people, and then at the final stage just, you know, behind the paywall of Steam or something like that.
Yeah.
So I was like sticking to it until it really was finished. And right now I feel free and can do something else.
What does that lead you to now?
I don't know.
that's a good thing, though. That
I don't know. I don't know, and I love it. Actually, yeah. that's the best feeling I had since 10 years, because I was, with each installment, with each new installment of Submachine, I was feeling a bit more tied up with the format, because I was doing something again, the same. Let's say the same. They are all different, but it's basically the same game. And right now I'm, you know, staring into the void and wondering what's going to come up.
Wow, yeah, that's exciting, man. So, I suppose because the Submachines did paint like a cohesive sort of universe. I suppose there's a point where do you feel sad to kind of let it go a little bit? You know, because I suppose that's a point where if you kind of finish with a
no, not really. You know, I've created a lot of comic books, and it's the same, actually, when you finish a comic book, when you have A submachine was even easier because when you create a comic book, then you have a set of characters that are with you, that are talking, that are doing everything that's happening in a comic book. Mm. And then you have to say goodbye to them. Each one, you know, this is, you know, like in the movie, like on the movie set, this is a wrap for you. And yeah, that's it. And you're not coming back into action anymore. So finishing the comic book is actually a bit harder than finishing Submachine, because in Submachine there's not that much of characters.
Yeah.
Actually, it's just environments and legend and theories and everything like that, but there's nothing like happening actually. That's why when people ask me why don't I create a movie about Submachine, then I always answer, because there is nothing to tell, actually.
Mm. Yeah, because it's almost like an interesting
interaction. This game happens in your head, or in the head of a player, not in the game itself, actually.
Exactly, so, like what we were saying, sometimes certain comics being translated to movies or translating to another medium, isn't it? That, yeah, the whole nature of something like Submachine is that it's meant to be experienced in that way. Yeah.
Is the interactivity? That's the keyword.
You could take the principles of your of Submachine and introduce characters, and you can make a movie that way. Not that you would or want to, because what if it went wrong?
Yeah. So, I mean,
but then it wouldn't be, you know, like similar to the source material, and people will hate me for it.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think the whole thing about that. For me, the game, it says the no dialogue and the sort of just ambient music and the
loneliness.
Isolation. Mm. It's really
atmosphere.
Yeah, I sort of really lost myself in them every time. They're really immersive, I think.
Cool, thanks.
That's all right, man. Yeah, I think they definitely. Stuff like that's just really, you know, because there's certain other games that are a lot more character driven, you know, where you are playing as. I just finished the latest Metal Gear Solid game, and you're playing as a character. You know, it's about that character, and I'm waiting for the. You know, I'm playing it to get to the next cutscene because I'm engrossed in the story. You know,
I mean, if there was a character in Five Nights at Freddy's, would it be scary?
I don't think so.
Watching someone else, you know,
would it be just another toy?
Yeah,
that would be the biggest twist.
It wasn't you.
Yeah. But the scary thing about those games, I guess, and the same like Slenderman and stuff as well, you are...
So scary.
You are... Because you're kind of the person in it. It's... like, in Metal Gear Solid, I wouldn't be... Like, do you play Metal Gear Solid?
No, not yet. I've got it in my library. It's waiting.
Well, in that game, like, there's scary bits, but only, like, a little tiny... Well, creepy bits. Like, but even then... Your character's a badass, so it's like, you know he can handle it, so you're not kind of scared. You're like, well, look, I'm Solid Snake, and I've got a gun, and I can, you know, fuck these people.
You're just playing a character, it's not you, actually.
Yeah, whereas I would be scared.
You're playing the big-ass soldier.
No, I thought Alien Isolation captured that.
Oh, Jesus, please, stop.
Why? Did you not
almost wasn't able to finish this game. because it's
scary, right?
Yeah. I can't even imagine touching this game in Oculus. That would be just... People have done it. So.
I mean, what were your what were your thoughts on that?
On Isolation?
Yeah.
Well, this game just oozes atmosphere. Yeah. You don't even have to... They've done it so well.
Yeah.
You don't even have to see the alien to be completely drenched in sweat and dying of fear.
I mean,
the
robots too, and all of it. It was beautifully designed, and also so true to the original.
Goddamn robots,
the original film, like taking all the design features of the spaceship.
Yeah, of the 70s,
kind of early 80s computers.
Yeah, late 70s, I would say, but
late 79 was the first one.
79, not yeah.
And they have those sort of what computers might be.
I played a bit of it, and it did. The thing I found hard was, you know, when you're in a safe bit, so you're in the bit with your crew, and then you know you've got to go out of the door or down a ladder into the... I don't want to leave. Because I was playing...
But there is even one more scary moment, because when you go into the unknown and you know that that the alien might be there, okay, that's stage one. Stage two is there was a location when you knew that it's in there, and you had to go there anyway.
That was the most
scary thing.
Yeah, the standing by the lift was, for me, the most... because you call the lift and the lift takes about 30 seconds to come. Yeah. So you're standing alone in a room waiting for the just alien waiting. To drop down. Yeah. And like, I don't think I've lived that level of fear.
Well, I think as yeah. well, that thing of like the scarier moments are when it's not there. It's like the between the panels in the comic. It's the bits that aren't happening that, again, the player...
It's all in your head.
Yeah, because you're imagining it. You're going, yeah. So it kind of, what it does is it plays into your fear because it'll that sort of fear is accustomed to you because you're imagining it. Then when the alien comes down and you get hit, it's like, okay, now it's over. You know, you jump yeah. and then you're kind of, yeah, yeah. you're fine and then you start and then you get scared.
Maybe
again.
That's what real death's like.
Yeah. Like, it's just, yeah, it's like, yeah, well, I haven't played enough of it, but it's...
Yeah, but they, you know, you've got the alien, but then the face huggers come. Oh, into play, and that's another scary thing because you can't see them.
You can shoot at them and run out of bullets, and you just click. Yeah, like oof, that's horrible,
man. Yeah, that game. Yeah, so
that was one of the better games of last year. I think it was last year.
Yeah,
maybe a year before, but I played it last year. So for me, it's 2015.
I think because games are getting so open world now. It's nice that there's. I prefer.
Yeah, it's
like,
kind of refreshing. Yeah, just a story. Yeah,
yeah. I love narrative games. That's what I'm all about. Like, I even play Assassin's Creed, even though that I don't think they're very good, because like they do that. If you follow an exact storyline, I think the thing of the game is, you know, when you have the, like you said, when you have that open world,
yeah.
like it's the ability to close it down into a coherent narrative,
yeah.
but never let the player feel like they've been constrained.
Yeah, I think Fallout, the new Fallout's really good for that as well. The stories in Fallout, you tend to not just walk up to someone and get a quest. You'll walk past something and it will happen in front of you, and then they'll call you over, which is really, and then you or you kind of get involved in something you see, and it's really interesting.
I'll drop you another name, another title, and I wonder if you've played it, The Wolfenstein. The Wolfenstein New Order.
Have you played it?
I picked it up once and looked at the box in a game store.
Yeah, wait. Is
that's
that
an amazing game. That's you really should try it. Yeah, that's the best shooter of last year.
Oh no, I'm thinking of The Wolf Among Us, which is.
I'm glad you
said last year. No, Wolf Among Us. That was a good game too, but for a different reason. But Wolfenstein.
Yeah.
The New Order. That's a perfect shooter.
Mm.
Yeah, it's got a great story. It's got Nazis. It's got everything.
Because I got a PS4 like a month or two ago, so I'm kind of getting all the games I didn't get a chance to play.
Write it down. Write it down.
I will do,
that's,
man.
That's
I will
really, really, really.
I was
really
kind
fantastic
of the
game.
Last year. I was shying away from game trailers because it upset me because I couldn't buy them. So I'd just be like, I don't want to see them.
Look it up.
Have you seen Until Dawn as well? Have you played that?
No, I've seen Let's Plays and.
That's pretty scary.
That's but actually yeah. that's not my kind of game to play.
Yeah, the characters are a little bit that kind of cheesy horror film, you know.
Yeah.
Where
yeah, I know. I've seen it, but I think I the Telltale kind of drove me away from this formula of gameplay.
Yeah,
because I played the Walking Dead and Wolf Among Us and all those other games. I'm kind of done with them right now.
Yeah, there was
I came back to the to shooting Nazis, and that's just so much fun.
That's always good fun.
Yeah, exactly, man.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think what other games I've been really hyped. Oh, the Mad Max game was crazy as well.
Is it good?
Yeah, that's
because I can download that for like £20 on PS4.
Yeah, do it, man. Mad Max. Did you get to play Mad Max? Have you played?
No, it's still in my queue because you know once I started working on Submachine. In April last year, and it was like working and not working. In the meantime, I didn't input anything. So I have a very large backlog of games and books and movies that I want to watch. And right now, I'll do them all at once. I think
one after another.
Because there is the creations the creation phase and then right now. The creation is finished, and I have all the time in the world to sit back and take everything in. You know what I want, all the books and, as I said, movies and etc.
It's a strange thing because I think, especially like as you know, a person making something, you have those phases where you almost don't have time to play any new games or listen to any new music or maybe any new films or whatever.
Maybe it's not the question of not having time, but the question of not wanting to.
Oh, I see, yeah. I know what you mean, actually, yeah. But then you have those points where, you know, maybe if you have a week where you listen to, like, say for me as a musician, if I have a week where I just listen to loads of new music, yeah, maybe watch...
Well, for me this year, it was last year. I had a big break from creating Submachine when Fallout came out, as you said. I believe I played like 70 hours in the first week of purchasing it. That was the one thing that caught my attention, and I couldn't resist it.
Yeah, that's been ruining my music career right now. I've been playing it so much. I mean, it's actually got to a stage where if I keep playing it at the level I am, I know it's going to like affect my relationship with my girlfriend. I've actually got to stop a bit because she'll be like, Jake, I haven't spoke to you in 2 days. And I'm just like, yeah, but I got this, there's this settlement and it's been invaded by super mutants. I got to sort it out. And then, you know, I think once you get invested in a world, you can just kind of live in it for a while, you know?
I had to make a very, very... adult decision to just remove this game from my computer, so uninstall it. So I finished the story and then run around, convinced myself that there is nothing else for me to do, and just uninstall it, and that's it.
See,
I'll probably come back to it some later on.
Yeah, I know that some guy recently sued them, was trying to sue them because he lost his job because of it.
Yeah.
Really?
I tell you what, I'm not in my house.
That's stupid. Suing someone because you're stupid.
But I'm not at my house for 2 days because I'm staying in London to record this, and then I'm going to Brighton to do something else. So I couldn't play Fallout for 2 days. So on the train here, I was just like, I'm gonna load a video up on YouTube and watch someone play. So I just had to watch.
So you already have a withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah, I'm having to watch less plays. I'm like, I just need to see someone doing something on it because, like, I just
I'm like that with like social media being connected to the internet.
Yeah.
Or like, I get bored so quickly. Like, I'll between me walking to the train station, which is 5 minutes maximum, I'll load up some YouTube on my phone to listen to while I walk over there, because I've got like limited space, so I can't carry too much music or anything. So like, I'll listen to like just anything keep me from my own thoughts.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That's what I do when I work on games. I tend to find the nearest podcast that I can find and just listen to it. It doesn't matter actually what's happening in what are you talking about, but I have to hear that, you know, people talking to me.
Yeah. What podcasts do you listen to at the moment?
At the moment, the Co-optional, that's the main one. That's the guys, the Total Biscuit, you probably heard of him.
I'm not too sure, I have to check him out either. Though. Yeah.
Co-optional podcast. Well, from your side, then the Gymquisition and the Podquisition, Jim Sterling, anything?
Oh yeah, Jim Sterling. You're right. Yeah, I know.
Gymquisition, and he has his own podcast, so I listen to it as well.
It's weird because I've only been into that being said, I've kind of been into podcasts for about 10 years, but really hard into podcasts for the last two.
There are so many right now.
For about 2 years, I only rediscovered them recently. I mean, 2 years, relatively recently.
Yeah.
But it's a great format. I mean, it's
addictive to listen to.
It's great because, you know, you can be doing other things. I mean, it's like radio on demand, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like television. You can watch exactly what you want. You can listen to exactly what. It's not like you flick on the radio and they talk about, you know, like the traffic and then there's a song. You can listen to exactly the kind of thing you're into.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, and then that's why I was like, man, right, who would I want to talk to? If I had one, then I was like, yeah, let's just do one. And it was like, really, like, this podcast is really, like, a kind of a cheat sheet way to meet people that or chat to people we like. Because, like, it was like, oh, you know.
Because we're social people.
Yeah, it's like, I'm really into your video games.
The other thing is that people who do podcasts, they actually don't have any agenda. They tend to be very strict and honest in their opinions. So, for example, last 3 years of listening to gaming podcasts taught me so much about gaming, about creating, about what to do and what not to do when creating games. So this is not only, you know, the entertainment for me, but only it carries the value of learning stuff.
Man, I have to listen to the any of those ones you mentioned gaming podcasts, did you say?
Yeah, both of them.
Cool. Yeah, cuz I'm trying to get into some video game music, so I might have to see if they have any episodes on that, cuz that'd be great, cuz I'm only just starting out on that. But again, all that sort of stuff for me, most of the things I do are just an excuse to be around stuff I like, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Same with these, it's just like I'm into what you do, so it's like, oh, well, if I have a podcast, that means I get to chat to you for an hour about it. And we've got to get loads of people we're into on this podcast, you know, because they're just people that it's to be fun to have a chat with. But yeah, it's nice not having agenda and not having to promote anything. Or just,
I mean, yeah, because radio is always,
that's so freeing,
it's always come from radio stations, which always have a sort of business model or like a, you know, something a guideline for the presenters to be following a certain path or promoting a certain thing.
Yeah.
Whereas a podcast is literally following an interest or something that it's unregulated.
Yeah.
So people can literally talk about, you know, yeah. I mean, like you said, right, when
it costs like podcast, nothing to create. So that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was exactly it, actually, because I'm finishing off an album at the moment that's cost a lot of money. So I'm like, well, I want to do other stuff, but that, I haven't got any more budget, really, you know, so it's like, what else could I do? And a podcast doesn't cost much. And you can, the other thing in terms of, like, if you look at it kind of in a more cold business sense, like, it means you can release a product every week, whereas I can't put a single out every week because people won't want to hear that many songs because it's just too much.
Yeah, oversaturation, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, I put a song out maybe about once every month and a half at the moment, and that's building to an eventual, you know, full record launch, you know, in a few months or whatever. But with this, you can just, you know, we're trying to do, isn't it, like 10 weeks on, 8 weeks off, 10 weeks on again, and separate into series. And it's just a good way to just put cool stuff out every week, isn't it? Mm. I think we're at that age now, like you were saying, with the one-man factory thing, that's becoming such a liberating way to make stuff. Like, you don't have to answer to anyone anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more stress and sometimes less money or... it can be less money. That being said, you can also be a lot, you can have a lot smaller of a fan base and make 100% of the money and be very sustainable.
But you know, when you create, actually, it's never about money, really.
No, definitely. Absolutely not.
And if you have this attitude that it's never about the money will probably come to you.
Yeah, exactly. All I want is really enough.
That's trivial, but that's true. That's catch 22.
People think, like, some people like might think it's childish to say, but it has to be reasserted that that's what it's about.
Yeah,
that that's the creative. The creative agenda is never money, but it's creative to create.
Don't
get me wrong. I mean, I know that I want to make enough money to make more art, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But that's...
Yeah, sure, but if you didn't have any money, would you stop doing it?
Yeah. Oh, no, probably not. Yeah. If I had no money, then like now, I haven't got much money now, and I go, what can I do with the tools I've got?
Yeah.
I've got a couple of microphones, we've got Skype, let's just interview some cool people.
It's like when people say, well, what if I gave you £10?
Yeah.
You know, I'd probably get a pedal. What would you do if I gave you £100? I'd probably get some microphones. And what if I gave you £1,000? A studio. And it's always fulfilling that creative desire.
If I had £1,000,000, I could spend every penny of it making a project. It just depends on the money you've got, doesn't it? Like, and I think, that thing now that we can, I mean, you know, I've pretty much got all the tools now to record a whole orchestra in my bedroom with sampling. I can record something that years ago would have cost hundreds of thousands of pounds to record, but you know, only cost me maybe £400 for the software that has thousands upon thousands of samples. I mean, it's not exactly the same as recording a real orchestra, but you can kind of go, well, I can completely fulfill my artistic vision in my bedroom. It's amazing, you know. I think that's leading to a lot more interesting, I don't know, artistic movements now. I think it's kind of, everyone's just getting left to be able to do their own thing more.
Decentralization.
That thing that I think, it's just like you said with that organization, it's like you have to be able to meet your own, like you do with your deadlines. You have to be able to motivate yourself to do them, because some people need a label to kind of, or a manager to, you know, call them up and make sure they're doing what they do, I guess. But
for people.
Well,
like
being
us,
being your own manager is kind of tough as well, because you don't have to do it actually. You don't have to do it.
Yeah, that's what
but yeah. There is this drive inside you that tells you that you need to do it, and you just do it.
Yeah.
Right, I think we're about winding down to a close, but I'd like to know, just before we finish up, for someone who would want to follow a similar creative path to you, following down, you know, the games design or comic books kind of territory, what advice would you give them?
Don't do it.
Like to hear. Don't do it.
Don't do it. That's a tough
that's
one.
That's terrible. Yeah.
No, but joking aside, it's I've said everything before, actually. If you want to do it, then just do it from the love of the subject and don't expect any money from it from the start, especially when it comes to comic books and especially in Poland. But as far as gaming goes, you know, there's no advice that I could give, because 99% of games are created in workspace environment of many people, and there are teams of people that work on games, and that's completely not what I do. So I can tell people, you know, just grab a software, a game creating software, and just do the game, and that's it. But that's not. I don't think that's kind of good of advice. Well,
not even in the sense of making
studio art and programming, and that's it.
Sorry, I was just saying, not even in the sense of like creating a portfolio to get into that side of it. Or are you not interested in the sort of big games, you know, industry side of it?
No, completely not. I'm just so on the outer rim of everything that's happening in game industry. So,
sure,
I think that's nice. There can be peace, like, you know, it's kind of like peaceful because you're in your world.
Yeah, because you know, I'm standing on the outside and I'm watching what's happening right now in the industry with all the DLCs, paid DLCs, and microtransactions in AAA gaming, which are $60 each. And I'm watching this. I'm also seeing the players that hate that, and I'm. Everybody is watching. Everybody is waiting for this bubble to burst. You know, for the AAA gaming to somehow collapse on itself. And if it does, then it's fine for me, because I'm standing right there. I'm doing my own thing, and more people will come and see what I do. That doesn't affect me. I don't affect them, and they don't affect me. That's for me. That's a perfect situation.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah, that's definitely a good way to be. Hopefully that's, again, sort of position I'm more. I try and exist in is to not necessarily need the an industry.
And I'm trying to suck up to it.
That's what it's going with your whole Patreon thing and people connecting more closely with the content creators.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Well, I think
in my opinion, that's a very good direction that we are heading right now, and I couldn't be happier for the future.
Definitely.
And that was that. That was a real interesting glance into, you know, another side of, I don't know, another part of Europe that maybe we're not as familiar with in the mainstream in terms of artistic output. You know, even right now, I can't think of any particularly big bands in the UK that are from Poland. You know, so it's really interesting to get an insight on the culture there, and also the fact he's a fucking Stuart Lee fan, man. I really didn't think, you know, English comedy would maybe translate to certain countries in those parts of Europe, or even in Europe in general, really. But again, I suppose that's fucking English people like me thinking our comedy's too fucking clever for everyone else, which it isn't. Because at the end of the day, we got Stuart Lee, but we also got fucking Mrs. Brown's Boy. Let's be honest, that is a hock of shit. God, I'm fucking slagging. Why am I slagging people off? What am I doing? Look, yeah, again, thank you for listening this week. I'm going to keep it short and sweet, which is probably for the best. Next week, we have Said the Shotgun, which is a band who I met when I was out in LA. They are from Sacramento, California. And we're also talk about all sorts of things, but also that they use a Kickstarter project
that did pretty well. We talk about that. We also talk about the difficulties of maintaining, because also these guys aren't like super, super famous. We wanted to talk to someone who's in the process of establishing themselves and talking about the trials and tribulations, the tough sides of that, how it affects personal life. But then, we go off and we never really plan the talks and they just go where they go. So yeah, thank you for listening and I will catch you next week.